Okay, bonus section for chapter 7. One of my favorites. Besides being very tactical, I'm also very big into kind of just self-aware, having to kind of do a self-check. And this one is chapter 7, the 5 ego buckets.
That to me was it's been a lot of self-work lately for me in going through this book and just a lot of what's been going on in our life lately, or for me at least.
How did you feel when I wrote a chapter, or at least part of the chapter was about you?
You know, I wasn't taken back. I wasn't shocked because I was already going through that self-discovery, that self-sabotage.
Yeah.
But I was kind of like, okay, I get it. Yeah.
Hey, it was a true story.
Yeah.
I mean, it was as real as it gets. So what better story to use than a story about my husband?
Yeah. And I could take it two different ways. One is I could get a little bit offended and, you know, say like, why'd you have to put it in there? But the other side was...
Or I could have changed your name.
Right.
But I chose not to because I wanted it to be real.
Yeah. Instead of Carlos.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was two different ways I could take it. And then we'll dive into the actual ego buckets. But, you know, I could, you know, get my ego in front of it and get a little offended. Or I could be open and receptive and be like, you know what? I'm going to own it. I'm going to own the outcome of the fact that I screwed up and yeah, move forward.
Yeah. So the 5 ego buckets are need for significance, need for chaos, need for perfection, need for acceptance, need for familiarity.
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 For those listening.
God, I learned that I suck at reading during this audible, but or audio version. But anyways, yeah, so I found myself in the need for perfection.
Yeah.
That was my personal ego bucket, and I couldn't let go. Everything needed to be perfect, and I was the only one who could do it. No one could do it as good as me, so I might as well just do everything myself.
Yeah.
That was me, like, years ago when I first started to organize it. Yeah, I think even when I owned a bar in Ybor City many years ago. I never left that thing. I was there all day and night. But yeah, I fell into perfection, the need for perfection. And sometimes we're in a few different ego buckets.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, yours was the need for significance.
It was huge. And I will say that it actually, you know, you only got a taste of it in the book. But the need for significance, and honestly, it was for me, it was a combination. Like, there was a couple buckets that were like half filled and then some that were, you know, filled to the brim, spilling over. But it carried over into my childhood. The need for significance and acceptance really was because I always looked so young. I always looked at least 10 years younger than I was. And so if you can imagine, if I was 21 years old, I ended up looking like I was 13.
12.
Or 12. But
the funny part is because Chris was 21 when I met him.
Yeah.
And we worked together in our careers. That's how we met. And he came to mic me up and I was like, what are you, 12? Don't you remember? I said, yeah. What are you, 12? And he was 21.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, but you know, for me, and again, this is a whole nother element that we talk through, which is, you know, with that self-sabotage, is having to break that down for yourself and go through the suck, go through the hard stuff to really dig deep and to be able to start moving forward with it. And so for me, that was major because I grew up with this kind of like sheltered childhood, but at the same time, I didn't really have confidence in myself. And I always felt that I needed some kind of affirmation or this element of significance because just a combination of things. One is people, by the way I looked and acted, didn't feel like I could really do anything for myself or, you know, that I wasn't quote unquote old enough to do something.
They didn't take you seriously.
They didn't take me seriously. And so I had to overcompensate. And that's the way that I kind of like rejected the idea of that thought, but I overcommitted to the idea of being too professional, craving too much to be too perfect. I would try to overexplain things, which is now we understand is talking in color as opposed to black and white. Which again, everything here, the ego buckets, me not understanding and figuring this out for myself would have caused me, I'll be honest with you, in talking through this right now, is I probably would be divorced.
Probably.
I had a horrible marriage.
Yeah.
And just never been satisfied with where I am myself. And I'll be honest with you, and this is hard, but I had bouts of, you know, considering killing myself. You know, it's a hard thing to talk about, but it all goes into, you know, what I've, you know, all these like dependencies that I had.
So that need for dependency is huge. And more oftentimes than not, and people don't want to do this work and they don't want to talk about it, it comes from your childhood or your past experiences, trauma, whether good or bad, that shapes us into the boss, person, parent, spouse that we are today.
Yeah. And I did not like what I call like the older version of me. Even going through an exercise with somebody who was helping to coach me through a lot of these things, and I understood the concept of black and white versus talking in color, and taking it back, once I started to kind of like overcome this and going through the idea of trying to channel this, like the best version of me, he told me, and he said, think back to the younger you and just like trying to tap into this level of confidence and this, like this drive. And I'm like, no, that's not the older version of me. That's the new version of me, because the old version of me was timid and insecure. And so I needed to break that. I needed to destroy the old version of me.
Well, that's in 10X is easier than 2X. Or no, be your future self now. Mm-hmm. Sorry. He talks about that the old version of you has to commit suicide, literally, for the new version of you to emerge.
Yeah. And I saw all of these ego buckets in me in different degrees. And so I had to, again, back to the other earlier chapters, is obsess over my weakness, but not necessarily fix it, but destroy it.
Yeah, mine, perfectionism, that comes from not my childhood, but a past relationship where if it wasn't perfect, I didn't want to have to deal with the chaos that came with it.
Yeah.
So you're always trying to overachieve perfection so that you didn't have to end up in an argument or fighting with your ex.
Yeah.
And now I've discovered I don't need perfection. I just like to be minimal.
Yeah.
It's completely different. But I think another great topic in here that Chris, you and I do, that I took you on a journey.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always bringing things to Chris. Chris, let's try this. And he always says yes. He's never actually said no to me.
That's actually one of my golden rules, is that because a huge part of my self-sabotage earlier was saying no. And again, just like pulling back. And I lost a lot of huge opportunities because of that. And so now I say yes.
Yeah. Was to do a couples retreat quarterly meeting.
Yeah.
So we did a couples quarterly. We started this a few years ago, and I ran it just like you would run a company quarterly, with certain exercises like there's SWOT analysis, but mm-hmm. we did it for ourselves. We did other things. But one of the biggest things we did during that couples quarterly was self-sabotage exercise.
Oh my goodness.
And I think that exercise alone changed me and Chris. You see my growth and my, like how everyone's like, my God, Libby, you're going so fast. How are you doing it? Like, through all this self work, it's not through anything but that self work and being aware, but that sabotaging exercise, self-sabotaging, which my favorite phrase was, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. And so we did it, and you know, there's some questions that you can run through. First, you got to figure out, what are you sabotaging?
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm misputting that in the book. Like, what are your self-sabotaging tendencies? Once you discover them, then we have the questions that you ask yourself, right? How did you sabotage? Did you sabotage since the last time we met?
Right.
You know, what was the context before you did? Like, what environment were you in?
Yeah.
We are sometimes putting ourselves in environments that we're going to like, it's like, well, you're sabotaging yourself. You're going to fail. You know, you're going to give in. You know that like there's certain people in our life that we kind of just kind of shrink to.
Yeah. And so here's the hard truth that I tell anybody who comes into our companies. I explain to them that, and this is true, is that everything in life is our fault. And I say that because everything can be prevented to a certain extent. It's the butterfly effect. It's having been introduced to certain situations. And I use the example of driving a car. if somebody says that they got rear-ended, it wasn't my fault. It was somebody else. It's all them. You then close off any notion of anything, of being able to accept that, to be able to create change. But in reality, it is our fault because we chose to start to drive out at a certain time of the day when it's busy and there's traffic. We chose to move into a certain type of lane. We chose not to wait for a better clearance when we're merging into traffic.
Yeah.
We chose not to check the rear mirrors every once in a while. Again, this is all about, you know, you owning the outcome.
Owning the outcome. I love that. So back to the questions. Did you self-sabotage since the last time we met, right, that we worked through? And with the Couples Quarterly, me and Chris are hoping to run a live in-person Couples Quarterly in 2026.
Yeah, so as of listening to this, we'll make sure to have that in front of, this is something that's important.
Yes, share for us, it changed not just our business, but our marriage, our life, our home, our kids.
Which made the business even better.
Yeah. But did you sabotage since the last time we met? What was the context before you did it? I noticed that I was putting myself in places that I was going to sabotage in.
Mm, yeah.
Because I kind of shrank to the people in that room.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. Because one of the other self-sabotages was sticking too tightly to your morals.
Oh, yeah.
And that knowing that now.
That could sound good from the surface, guys.
But what situations are you putting yourself in? Is you're putting yourself in rooms that didn't serve you.
Well, it's also now I have, you're gonna laugh when you guys hear this. Like, I've quit everything. So I've quit like every group, every mastermind, every coach, like I've quit everything. I'm only sitting in like one association and that's for our industry. I've quit volunteering. I've quit being on the board of things. I've quit everything. Obviously I'm still in the businesses, but I had to quit it all to clear it because I had overcommitted and I had extended myself so thin and I'm so tight to my morals that I would serve and like not miss a beat, not be late to my own detriment.
Self-destruct.
I would literally self-destruct myself, but making sure that I was holding so tight to those commitments. And so now... You know, I have a personal coach I retained for this season in my life, and they're also working with Chris. And I told the both of them that it's actually a really great experience to have a coach that's coaching you and your spouse. We have together calls and we have independent calls. But I told the coach and Chris, I need you guys to make sure I do not commit to anything right now. Do not let me join anything. Do not let me sign up for anything. Do not let me do anything. I've cleared the schedule and I've cleared that space so I don't feel bad. But if I sign up for something, I am like dedicated to the end. Like there is no getting me out of it. And so I really have to watch that. Yeah. Chris is laughing.
No, I'm laughing because everything about self-sabotage and going through that exercise. And again, this is something that I'm so passionate about. And I can't wait to be hosting these Couples Quarterlies with everybody in the future here. But one of the things that comes out of it also is one is asking permission from your spouse to work through this and be your bumper. Because again, the whole idea of don't fix your weakness or obsess over your weakness, but don't fix it. And it's really, you know, use and lean into the people in your life around you. But if you haven't yet asked permission on saying, are you willing to help me out through this? If you haven't asked that question yet, you're failing because you don't have to do it alone.
No. And even just asking Chris to call me out when he saw me sabotage, right? You actually catch yourself. I would start to say, I'm not sure, instead of I'm not ready yet.
Because I will turn my head so fast, looking dead in the eyes, and she knows it's coming.
Yeah, but... Another part of the book is, to me, before we can reach alignment, we have to reach awareness.
Yeah.
Awareness becomes before alignment, and then comes intention, and then comes execution. But before we can do any of that, we're just working on a superficial level, and we have to learn how to be self-aware. We have to be okay being uncomfortable, being called out on our bullshit, calling ourselves out, and not taking it as like criticism or getting mad or huffy or in our feelings, going back to the egos, mm-hmm. We have to become self-aware. That's half the journey.
Yeah. And the other thing goes in asking permission is from, let's just say, your significant other. It's making sure that they call you out, but it's never in an aggressive or negative tone. It's all in the goal that you're trying to achieve. And so in asking for that permission, it's all about being on the same page and having that psychological safety in how they're supporting you, not just calling you out.
So I had a lot of questions from entrepreneurs. How did I get my husband on board? How did I get him so invested in the vision and to how do we work together so great? This could be a whole nother topic or book, Chris.
And ideally we have one coming out shortly in the future.
Chris wants to write a book and I'm like, please, no, not right now. Like this was so much work. I mean, it was great, but yeah, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. And you know, everyone asks me how did I get Chris on board? And so for all of my listeners who are business owners, there is no separation between your home life and your marriage and the business. There is none. I have so many friends and entrepreneurs that their spouse is like tired of hearing about their business, tired of hearing them complain about employees. They don't care. They don't want to know. They don't want to be on that journey. And I think it's because one, you haven't shared your vision with them yet. You haven't really discovered yourself, and you're not inviting them into the business. You're not inviting them to be a part of that journey. And to me, that's what the couples quarterly did. We did the couples quarterly before I do the business quarterly. So one, I can get alignment on what does the family need? What does my marriage need? What are the goals of the marriage this quarter? What are we trying to do? Where do we want to go? What are we working on? And because the first couples quarterly had really nothing to do with business. Nothing. It was pure alignment in our marriage and in our family with our children. And for us to build each other's, we each built our own vision. Mm-hmm. And then we merged it for a family vision.
Yeah.
That's it. We did not talk business. And then I walk into my business quarterly knowing exactly how much I can give and how I can show up. But typically we do it as business owners. We do the business quarterly, we give everything to the business, and then there's nothing left to give to our marriage or our sex life or our family or our children. And then we wonder why our home life sucks and the business sucks too, because you can't have one and not the other.
Yeah.
And they both have to be working in harmony.
Yeah. And this plays into the later chapters with protecting your kingdom. But yeah, I will say this, you know, with this self-discovery and with the couple's quarterlies, and repeat this time and time again, the one layer deep by default starts as a method. And that's why we call it the one layer deep method. But over time in working through this, it has to be mechanical at first because you have to inject it in as a rhythm to then start to turn this method into a mindset. So the one layer deep method eventually becomes a mindset. And then from that mindset, it then becomes the culture.
Yes.
And this is so important because you need to go through the suck. You need to mm-hmm. work through it and be mechanical in this process until it becomes second nature.
And what you just said had nothing to do with business.
Nothing.
It was the method and then the mindset and then the culture. That's all applicable to your personal life, your marriage, your family, your business, your employees.
But what's amazing is that in writing One Layer Deep, the book, and how it focuses on business first, is it gives you a little bit of that flex to get used to the habit, to turn method into mindset. And then you can take it to the next level of now that I've got this mindset.
Well, it's easier for me to convince you from a business owner's perspective, here's a framework that's going to save your business versus like, let me help you with your life. Then it becomes another, what's it called? A shelf help book.
You pick it up. Oh, that seems nice. And then you put it back down and never do anything with your life.
But it's easier for me to get into your life, your business through business frameworks. And then you're like, oh, that worked. Maybe I should listen to her.
First comes a method.
Yep.
Then comes a mindset. Then comes the culture, or what I like to call the ritual.
The ritual or the culture. Yeah.
But I will say this, the way that I first started helping with Libby's self-sabotage, first started with the method. And what I ended up doing is I actually set alarms every single day at 11 o'clock in the morning because it was in a time where it just kind of threw off the patterns. And this alarm that went off every single day was, I labeled it, protect Libby at all costs.
Yeah.
Because I, as the person who bought into the idea of helping her, wanted to make absolute certain that I kept it top of mind. Again, I had to create a method and a pattern, a cadence to make sure that it became a mindset and I had mastery over it.
Awesome. I love that. And then in the chapter, we talk about protecting the kingdom.
Ah.
Right? That goes, segues right into what you were doing. You were protecting, you know, and not that I'm his kingdom, but protecting the kingdom. And I think that goes back into the self-sabotage, you know, with those outer walls. These are who we let in our life, you know, whether it's vendors, people, and then the courtyards, your friends, your peers. This chapter was really, the personal implementation of this section was really close to me because I had recently just done this with people in my life. And if you were in my life, you know that I have separated myself. Like I've kind of stepped back. And that's only because I'm chasing this vision. It has nothing to do with anyone or yeah. anything or any group or anything. Like I love everyone, but it's like, I got to focus.
Mm-hmm.
I got to focus, you know, protecting those outer walls from the vendors you bring in. You know, are you micromanaging those vendors? Are they a pain in your ass versus helping you? I mean, I had a cleaning company for one of my Airbnbs. It was not helping me. It was more of a pain in my butt than it was anything.
Yeah.
And I had to micromanage them and literally almost do their job for them. And I own a cleaning company.
Yeah.
But, you know, then the courtyard, this was a hard one. Chris actually, I think, had to go through this as well recently, where, you know, it's choosing, you know, your friends matter. And this goes with your family as well. It influences the culture of your kingdom, your friends, your family, who's inside that inner wall. And this also means, you know, it was hard because, like I said, I've recently left everything. Like when I say left, like, you know, I used to be in nonprofits and sit on boards and be in groups and left everything. And I needed to protect that courtyard.
Yeah.
And I did it for a reset is why I did it. And I had to take a break. We can't always be letting random people in that courtyard. And an example is like, I was the learning motivation junkie.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would go to every conference. I'm not talking just individual conferences. I mean, any conference that looked like it was going to be exciting because I lacked motivation in my life.
Uh-huh.
So I was like looking for it through temporary means. And so then I let all of these things in and they were all influencing me. Either the conference themselves, the people, the friends, and they were kind of influencing me, but they were also, I was hiding behind fake motivation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I have a lot to say through here with your kingdom in the throne room where you should genuinely stand. But like Libby said, is when you willingly decide to step out of your throne room, you step into the courtyard, you step into the outer walls. How much time are you putting towards the courtyard and the outer walls? How much time are you putting towards other things aside from sitting on that throne and understanding, again, back to the roots of like, why am I here? What am I doing?
I spent all my time in the courtyard because I was hiding from the throne room.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do the self-work. I didn't want to like ask myself difficult questions. I was over here hiding in the courtyard.
Yeah. And so you can imagine what's happening to the kingdom as you're absent from this throne room, as things continue to go on and move forward. Does anything really change or does it fall apart over time? And then you come back into it, you step back into it and you're like, shit, there's nothing left.
Or I've been in this situation too. You stay in the courtyard because you don't know, like your why, your vision isn't there. And then, you know, you stay in the courtyard because you don't want to go to the throne room. You don't want to deal with these difficult questions. Like, what is my purpose? Why am I doing all of this? Instead, you're like, can I just stay in the courtyard and be an absentee owner? But then my question is, why are you even owning a business?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Granted, there are seasons of being an absentee owner. Like if we have a family member that has a health issue or we hired a great COO and we can step back for a minute. But I think those are seasonal versus like, hey, I want to go play in the courtyard and splash around because I don't want to be involved in my business. And I feel like the reason a lot of people have that dream or that, you know, that idea is that to do the work of like, why am I doing this? What's my purpose? What am I really trying to achieve? They may not have the answer for yet. Yeah. Or they don't know, or maybe we don't want to do the hard work. You know, when Chris, it was so funny. I remember the day vividly. We were doing our morning date. So if you don't know what our morning date is, we walk every single morning that we can. We're on like 780 something morning
date.
As of
this recording. Yeah.
Yeah. As of this recording. And he was trying to tell me something about his childhood. We were talking about, because we were doing that self-work, right? So a conversation about something. And I looked at him and I said, I don't know what lie you're telling yourself, but you're more jacked up in your head than I am.
Yeah.
And he was just living superficially.
Right.
Like just, and I said, I don't know what lie you're telling yourself, but the way I hear you talk about your childhood and what I know about your childhood don't line up.
Yeah. What I had done is I built my entire childhood in my head. I built it around reason, but I never actually got to the real part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept reasoning around things and being very neutral in the way I talked about it and not really getting to the roots of like, you know, because when you reason, what you're doing is you're looking back at the past. You're actually living in the past.
You're rewriting it.
When you reason, you live back in the past and it doesn't give you an opportunity to make change. It doesn't give you an opportunity to change your future.
No. The last thing I just want to leave you guys is like the last statement in this chapter is a true king or queen doesn't find their identity in the walls or in the courtyard. They find it in the ability to sit alone on the throne and know that they belong there.
Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.